Welcome to this week's edition of the Sword and Staff. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Robinson, and joining me today, as always, is my co-host,
Sketchy Richie.
Sketchy Richie's back in the house, y'all. Richie, how you doing today, pal?
I'm doing pretty good. We've got a lot to go over today, doing a few different episodes, so.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a minute since we've been in the studio. I mean, we've been here. But we've just been doing other stuff other than actually doing the episodes that we've been doing.
Yep.
We've just been doing a lot of hanging out and
Nerd activities
and that kind of thing. But we're back with several episodes this week, and today's edition is going to be on the magician archetype. So we're going to be continuing our series on masculinity, the archetypes, and that kind of thing. And today's archetype is, as I just now said, the magician. So we've only got one more archetype to do after this. We got the king archetype to do, but we're getting
arguably
closer.
Arguably the most important one.
Yeah. So as of today, last time too. We're about halfway through the series, a little bit over halfway now through the series. It's four archetypes, so if you guys are interested in those, go back and listen to the episodes that we've done so far on the warrior and the lover archetypes. Really important stuff there. You need to be able to get those under your belt and understanding those so that whenever we finish up these next two, you'll kind of have a full-orbed version, envision of what masculinity kind of looks like. It's hard, but there's also some soft virtues in there as well. But there's also it's also very nuanced, right? There's that warrior thing. There's that warrior kind of archetype, and then there's the lover. And now today we're going to be getting into the kind of the wisdom aspect of it with the magician, and then we'll get into the ruling and dominion side of it next time with the king. So, Richie, before we dive in, how you feeling about this episode?
The magician archetype is one that I think is pretty familiar with both of us. I mean, when we we took that...
Yeah, there's quizzes out there.
That's one that we sort of...
scored high on,
like, together. So.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it has to do, too, with the fact that, like, I think if you're a pastor and you're interested in theology, like, or if you're just somebody who's interested in theology, like, this one's going to probably resound with you a little bit, you know what I mean? Because it's tied to wisdom.
Yeah.
So, for example, like whenever you actually get into the archetype, I guess we can go ahead and get into it here.
I mean, how can you come from from my perspective? How can you come from like paganism and mysticism and not be a full on like magician archetype?
Yeah. Well, so other names for the magician. I know that some people will take. Will not like that title right off the bat because it sounds very occultish. But
well, just give them some examples, like from film, like what, what is that vision of the magician archetype? What does that look like?
Well, you know, there's other names for it, and so for example, John Eldridge in his book, he talks about it too. So it's called Fathered by God. So he kind of lays out a Christian dealing of the archetypes, and then there's other people who have dealt with archetypes from a Christian perspective as well out there, but. One of the names that it also goes by is the sage or the holy man, you know, that kind of thing. It's kind of like this wise old man, elder type of archetype, right? And so, like, as soon as you say that, like, it just, like, you don't have to use the term magician.
Right.
You can use sage, you can use holy man, elder, old man, seer, prophet.
Yeah, if you want to stick to more like biblical terms, use prophet.
Yeah. So like getting in the scriptures, that's really where you're going to find this archetype at work.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're not going to have a Gandalf figure like in the Bible, right? Who's like this wizard. You don't have that. But where you do find this archetype is in the biblical prophets, right?
I mean, you have a man with a staff doing wonders. You have,
Moses.
Get into Moses. So, I mean,
yeah. Well, it's very archetypal, right?
Yep.
And he is doing miracles, and the magicians of Pharaoh are trying to mimic him and to copy the things that he is doing. You can get into how that's sourced differently. Right?
Battle of the Magicians right there.
Yeah, you can get into how that's sourced differently, like Moses and the miracles that he's doing are coming from the one true God. What Pharaoh and his magicians are doing are coming from the pagan gods in the unseen realm, who are actually real beings, by the way.
Which was the whole point of the plagues. And
that's things. Right. Yeah, 100%, because with the plagues, the one true God, Yahweh, is overcoming the gods of Egypt and the realms that they have dominion over, like the Nile, like the land, all of that kind of thing. So if you don't get that, and if you just have a materialistic view of what's actually going on there, you're going to miss, like, everything.
Yep.
So anyway, but those are some of the ways that we also, some names that this archetype goes by. It's kind of like the sage. I really like that. That's the name that John Eldridge uses in his book, Fathered by God. It's this man who is wise, he is steeped in wisdom, and that's just a synonym for it if you don't like magician. So,
picture like Gandalf from Lord of the Rings.
We got to save that. We got to get into the film part. But there's a book out there, a great book. I've read it. I commend it to you. The guys who write it's not Christian, but it's by Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette. It's kind of a classic work on the archetypes called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. They say this about the magician archetype. They say this secret knowledge, of course, gives the magician an enormous amount of power. And because he has knowledge of the dynamics of energy flows and patterns in nature, in human individuals and society and among the gods, the deep unconscious forces, he is a master at containing and channeling power. So basically it's talking about this ability to tap into the deep things.
Right.
Right. And to know deep things. Like you're able to see the patterns in creation. You're able to understand the patterns that you see in God's revelation. That kind of thing. That's kind of an ideal.
That's what we've been meaning by using these categories as a lens.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. So the primary role, they say, of the magician archetype is to contain and channel that type of energy and that knowledge for the good of all. Yep. That's the archetype. That's the ideal. Somebody who is this sage, kind of like your grandfather in some ways.
Yep.
Right? It's somebody who's been through a lot, who's experienced a lot. They have wisdom. And so you go to them and you're talking with them about, hey, whatever it is you're going through in life, and they're able to channel that and give you wisdom, and it's for your good. That's basically how that works out in real life at a practical level. So, all right, so let's get into the archetype in culture, like films, stories. Okay, what do you think is the big depiction of this in films?
Did you really think I was going to say anything other than Gandalf?
No, I knew what you were going to say. I knew exactly what you were going to say. So you think Gandalf?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the first one that comes to mind is Gandalf. I mean, he's literally a wizard.
Yeah.
Right.
And his journey is really a selfless journey, and he uses this wisdom, this magician sort of wisdom, for the good of Middle Earth.
Yeah. Well, you see, even in Peter Jackson's films, he gives hope to men.
Yep.
Right. And so he's doing something that's for the good of all. He's also come from Eru Iluvatar, right? And he's bringing heavenly knowledge, that kind of thing, to the good people of Middle Earth. We'll save the shadow versions. We'll get into some of those.
I mean, even with the Ring of Power that he's given, that's sort of what that ring does anyway. It instills like passion and things like that in people.
Yep. Another one as well that I think is a big one is Dumbledore from Harry Potter.
Yep.
Like he's basically like Gandalf.
Yep.
Right. But he's this mentor, right? To Harry and all the people of Hogwarts. But to Harry in particular, he's kind of the mentor, right? He's very much in some ways like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yep.
Who is also a picture of this. Or Master Yoda, right?
Yep.
Basically, this is going to be the person. Like, so we've talked about the hero's journey before, right? So in the circle of the hero's journey, in that cycle, the magician is typically the person who is going to come along as the mentor.
Yep.
Right? So, for example, Joseph Campbell, in his book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces, he calls the magician the archetype or the mentor who comes along with supernatural aid. So Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda. I think that in some ways you could even say that Gollum is a shadow version of that because he is the guide for Frodo and Sam going to Mordor, and which explains
a detached manipulator.
Yeah, he's a detached manipulator, and it really explains a lot of his actions.
His whole purpose is to get the ring back. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, his whole thing is to get the ring back. So, really, really interesting. So, other stories out there as well. Merlin.
Yeah.
Right? Merlin from the...
And this sort of advisor, this consultant role that the magician plays, I mean, you see why it's paralleled with prophet in Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way that they consult like Samuel and things like that.
Yeah. Samuel's a big, big figure that, right?
Yep.
But you've got Merlin in the like the Arthurian legends, right? He's a mentor to King Arthur. Even in The Matrix. We just talked about The Matrix here not too long ago. Morpheus is a mentor to Neo, right? All of these people are embodying this magician, sage.
Rafiki from The Lion King.
Yeah, Rafiki is a great example of that. All of these characters are tapping in and channeling this archetype that exists in the mind of God. You know, I don't want to go and get into Platonism again. We've talked about that, I think, in one of the episodes we've already done on this. I can't remember what one was, if it was The Lover or the Warrior. I can't remember. But, hey, if you want to know what we're talking about, just go back and listen to those. But but that's basically the archetype, right? All of these are depictions of this archetype. You know, in Scripture we've talked about, you see it in the prophets. Samuel is a great depiction of that, right? The kings go to him for wisdom, that kind of thing. And so, okay, so let's get into the kind of what we could go ahead and talk about the shadow a little bit. There's a couple things here we could back up and talk about. But let's talk about the shadow side of the magician, right? There's two sides to the shadow, the bipolar part. The first one that we're going to talk about is the detached manipulator, right? So what does the detached manipulator look like?
Right off the bat, you see this sort of inverse image of what Gandalf is. You see it in Saruman in his betrayal and his turning to the other side.
Yeah. I think that Saruman is a great example of that, right? He becomes detached in the way that he deals with Gandalf, right? He basically casts off their friendship and he becomes very detached.
Yeah, sort of as the darkness mounts and Sauron's rage starts to grow again out of fear.
Yeah.
He becomes this detached manipulator.
Yeah. There's a kind of a trickster element to it, too, in some ways. So, kind of reminds me in some ways of Loki.
Yep.
Right? Loki is a trickster. And you see that. I mean, he's very smart, obviously. Like, if you watch like we did the whole episode where we reviewed the show Loki. And he's a god of mischief, right?
Yep.
So, he's very intelligent. And he has knowledge. But he uses it in a way that's detached, right?
Yep.
Where he uses it not for the good of people, but as a means of power over other people, right? Which is what Saruman is doing.
And also like the serpent in the garden.
That's exactly right. Great, great catch there with that. It's using knowledge for the sake of dominating others, right? Which is what Saruman's doing, and which ultimately what Sauron's doing as well. They're exercising this wisdom. It takes you back in some ways to the whole Watcher story.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
The angelic beings which come down. What is it that they give? They give wisdom.
Yep.
But what do they do it for? So that humanity would destroy themselves with it. So it's kind of a way to exercise
their own personal gain with the worship that comes from the exchange of that knowledge.
Yep, that's exactly right. Good stuff. So what are some things that we should watch out for with a detached manipulator? Like, what do you think are some of the telltale signs that you're dealing with somebody who is a detached manipulator? I'll kind of start us off here. It's somebody who's totally disconnected, right? Somebody who is cold, who's cynical, right? Somebody who just does not seem to care about you as a person, right? You've probably experienced this in situations at work, right? Where you have that boss who's kind of cold and they, you know, everybody's experienced that, I think. But that's kind of could be kind of like what it feels like in some ways to deal with that. I don't know if you got anything you want to throw in.
People giving like half truths and withholding information, like to manipulate a situation for their advantage.
Yeah,
things like that.
The holding back information part's really good.
Yep,
because that's really what this whole thing's about.
Right.
Right, the information, the wisdom, that kind of thing. So it's holding parts of it back, using it to manipulate you.
And enslave somebody.
Enslave somebody. Yep, it's very good. I really, really think that a great depiction of this is in film, other than Saruman as Voldemort and Harry Potter. Right? Like, there's just certain things about Harry's story that he knows. And he only gives him bits and pieces of it, you know, whenever they're exchanging with one another. And it leads to, you can see, like, throughout the story, like, Harry is very distressed in some ways at the similarities that he shares with Voldemort. But it's kind of a way to manipulate him, you know what I mean? To almost kind of trick him into thinking they are alike so that he'll end up falling prey to his domination. That's what a detached manipulator does. The other one...
I mean, you see this in, like, even in politics with politicians being detached manipulators. And one thing in the church, even, like, with false teachers and heretics in the pulpit and the way that they withhold information or warp information for their own personal gain.
Moore and Gillette in their book on the archetype say, whenever we are detached, unrelated, and withholding what we know that could help others, whenever we use our knowledge as a weapon to belittle or to control others, or to bolster our status or wealth at others' expense, we are identified with the shadow magician as manipulator. We are doing, in other words, he says, black magic, damaging ourselves as well as those who could benefit from our wisdom. Which ultimately is, you could speak on that from you know, being somebody who used to be present in the cult world.
Yep.
But that's basically what black magic is, that I understand it, right? It's it's a magic that's very self-centered.
Yep.
Right? It's now, obviously, I don't agree with everything in this book, right? I'm a Christian, but I think that's a very well said line on what this looks like.
Yeah, that's why it's aligned so heavily with, like, Satanism and atheistic groups, because it's literally the worship and preservation of self.
That's very good. All right, so the other side of it, so that's the active side of the shadow. Now, there's a passive side of this shadow as well, and it's called the denying innocent one. Now, you may not, that may not sound too familiar to you at first, but once we dig into it, I think that it will be really familiar. This is somebody who always plays the helpless victim. Right? I think that a great depiction of this, maybe the best depiction of this, is Gollum. Like, whenever, so it's like Sam hears him, right? Like, they're climbing the stairs, you know, there at Minas Morgul. And, wait, no, maybe it's before that. Or it's right there around that. But Sam hears him talk, you know, Smeagol's looking into a pool, and he's talking to himself, talking, you know, talking back and forth about what they're going to do. They're going to, you know, he's going to kill the hobbits. He's going to lead them, you know, to the big, you know, to the spider. I can't remember.
Yeah, Shelob.
Yeah, Shelob. Yeah, into Shelob's lair. And then he's going to get the ring for himself. But then Sam hears him and just clocks him, right? He's going to kill him. And he plays the victim, right? He's like, poor Smeagol. Smeagol would never do that, master. Right? Smeagol would never hurt master. That is the denying, or the denying innocent one. Just unable to take responsibility for their actions and always plays the victim. And it's passive, right? It's not an active manipulation. It's a passive kind of thing. So I think that that's a great depiction of it. I don't know if you I don't know if you've got another one out there that's a good one, but that's the best one that comes to mind for me.
I agree.
Okay. Well, okay, let's get into maybe some, I don't know, unless you've got something else that you want to cover here before we move on here to maybe some practical stuff with this archetype.
No, we can move into some practical applications. I mean, especially what it looks like in society and culture and things like that.
I think that one of the things that we have to really be careful with, and it's easy to do, is we need to be honest. We need to make sure that we're being honest. I think that that's one of the things that the shadow kind of falls into here. It's rooted kind of in some ways in dishonesty, like using information as a weapon, or using it in a way that could hurt others rather than helping others. So I think one of the ways that you can fight against that is just by becoming a person who is honest, who is transparent, and really does have the other person in mind who is coming to you seeking wisdom, right?
Right off the bat, I think about the X-Files and Fox Mulder sort of fighting to get this hidden information from the government to the public knowledge, to the public sphere. And then you have like these sort of intelligence agencies that's trying to control that and keep it hidden and things like that. So that's another reference that I see in that.
That's great. You know, ultimately I think in some ways Jesus is the greatest depiction of the sage.
Yep.
I mean, he comes from heaven. He takes on flesh. He dwells among people, and he does it for the good of people.
Yeah. Right?
He doesn't withhold information to manipulate people. He doesn't use wisdom as a weapon either. But he's not afraid to be truthful with people. You know, he's not afraid to flip over the table whenever the table needs flipped over, right? But I think that Jesus is makes known the will of God. He sets people straight whenever they've got that messed up, right? So I think that Jesus ultimately is the perfect ideal of this archetype of what wisdom. I mean, literally, Paul says in Colossians that all of the treasures of wisdom and knowledge are hidden in Christ Jesus.
Right.
So if you want to know what this archetype looks like, Christ Jesus is the person to look to. I mean, there's other great depictions out there, which we've talked about, but ultimately I think that Christ is the best depiction of what this looks like. I think another thing that can keep us from falling into the shadows here as well is learning to be a person who takes responsibility, which is hard.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially just in our culture that loves to play the victim. Like, you look around everywhere and nobody wants to own up to their stuff, but becoming a person who owns your stuff and who is able to admit when they're wrong, I think that's a good thing. Like, that keeps you from falling into the shadow side of this archetype. That and being honest, right? So I don't know if you got any. What are some things? I know that whenever you and I both kind of took a quiz on this, both of us kind of come back high on this one. What are some things that you've struggled with personally with this archetype, and what are some things that you've learned that's helped you kind of balance this out?
Right off the top of my head, I'm not sure. Like, there's so much that we've been on this journey for like 2.5 years looking into these archetypes. Well, you go first.
I think that it's easy for me to fall into the shadow side and use information to dominate. So, for example, like, whenever I became a Christian, I used to love to watch debates. And in some ways, like, some of the people that I really enjoyed watching, I think, are people who aren't kind. I'll just be honest with you. I think that there are some people out there, I won't say any names, but there are some people out there, even in the Reform circle, I think, who are big-time known debaters who use information as a cutting weapon in some ways.
Yep.
And I, just as a young Christian, I think that I picked up on that, and I could tend to do that at times. You know what I mean? Like, use knowledge and wisdom and things that I've
learned
as
a sword.
As a sword to hurt people or to cut people down, or to shame people in some ways. You
especially
know I mean?
Coming out of the cage stage.
Yeah, I think
that absolutely that was me.
Yeah, I think that the cage stage in some ways is really a falling into this in some ways. Yep. You know what I mean? It's kind of like falling into the shadow warrior.
Right, you get this new
wisdom, knowledge.
Reformation knowledge and wisdom and
these
debate tactics and things like that. Like these like presuppositional apologetics and things like that. And you're just ready to take on anybody and everybody that'll listen to you.
Yeah. And like you kind of use social media since you're not an actual debater.
Yeah.
And you don't do that. It's like you try to imitate that. And so you use social media kind of as a platform to have battles with people out there. You know what I mean? That was something I really struggled with. And sometimes, if I'm not careful, I can still yet struggle in that way and use information as a way to cut people down. I'm a lot less like that these days. Like, so for example, like, you know, I've had people like who will, so for example, like we planted a church. Our church is very reformed and also very liturgical, right? So, like, we do, like, Ash Wednesday services. We celebrate Advent. We celebrate the church calendar.
Yep.
And, you know, some whenever you've got a lot of reformed people in your church, one of the things that they're concerned about is justifying why you do this thing to the outside world.
Exactly.
It's like, you might want to give a disclaimer and say, hey, we're not Catholic, but this is why we do this thing, right? Yep. And for me, I'm just not really like that anymore. Like, I don't feel like that I have to justify anything that I do anymore to people who I don't know. You know what I mean? Used to be, I would have used that as a weapon against people to be like, this is why we do this, and you're wrong for
not doing that.
And you're lesser for not doing it. I just don't do that anymore.
Yep.
Like,
I was the same way. Yep.
Yeah.
I understand that.
If people don't agree with me on things, man, I'm totally cool with that. I don't have to change your mind. I don't have to try to manipulate you into thinking that you're lesser than because you disagree with me. Like, I've come to the point in my life for the most part that, hey, you've got that opinion, I've got this opinion, that's cool. Like, and I don't feel like I have to justify myself to you, and I don't feel like you have to justify yourself to me. Like, it's like one of the times, like, you and I have had lots of conversations before, and like, and say you've got to have a hard conversation with somebody, and I'm always like, you don't have to justify yourself to this person.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like that. You don't have to do that. So for me, that's one area that I've struggled with. I can use information to dominate if I'm not careful.
Yep.
I'm a lot less like that these days. But if I'm not careful, I can fall back into that pattern. So that's mine. I don't know if you got anything you want to add to that.
With me, a big struggle for myself was the withholding the information.
Yeah.
Like, even in the occult, even in paganism, like, all the secret knowledge that I was obtaining, I would retain it for myself, for my own personal power. And I really have a shadow side that tends to go that route with any of these categories and things that we get. I mean, it's like, I want to just keep this to myself, but I have to really overcome that and, like, no, let's share this for the church, for others. And
yeah, no, I think that that's really good. I think that whenever I was a younger man, I used to struggle with the victim thing. You know, like, I think that it's easy for, like, say, like, my 20s were a struggle. I feel like that I learned a lot of things.
Yeah.
I feel like that when I was in my 20s, I learned a lot of things the hard way.
Yep.
And I think that early on, it's because I saw it modeled just a lot in people that I was around and even in my home in some ways. I think that it was easy for me to model that in my own life and to be like, well, the reason why I didn't know this was because I just wasn't raised in a home where I was taught this.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, which is kind of might be true.
Yeah.
But you can use that in a way to where you're a victim. And instead of taking responsibility and being like, okay, I didn't know this, but I'm going to learn this and move forward. You just use it as a means to stay where you're at.
To stay in one place.
Yeah, stay in one place. So as a young man, I could see that in my life. That's not something that I struggle with at all anymore. Like, now I'm the person that's like, take responsibility, you know?
Yep.
Like, that's the, But I could be too harsh with that sometimes. Yep. I don't know. All right. What are some things that we've had to be mindful of in stepping into this? I guess what I just said, like, you can have those tendencies so that you have to always be mindful of them.
Yep.
Right? I think that that's one thing that you got to do. I don't know if you got anything that you want to add to that.
But I mean, just overcoming the selfishness that comes along with the shadow part of that thing.
I think that's key. Because at the core of this thing, I think that's what's there.
Like, you see in right standing, the magician is selfless with this knowledge and with these skills. But in shadow, it's all about selfishness.
It's all about me.
Yep, it's all about me.
Yeah. And I think that that's difficult, especially in a world that we live in now that's very me-centered.
Yeah, very self-preservation. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, you have to... Well, let's go back to Jesus. I think that you see this modeled in him perfectly. There is a selflessness there.
Right. If anybody is selfless and self-sacrificial, you see it.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, hey, I know that this episode's running a little bit short in comparison to some of the other ones, and the reality is, these don't have to be that long, right? They don't have to be that long. They're kind of snapshots of these where we're walking through, just having a conversation on some of these. And guess what? Having some shorter episodes is going to free us up to be able to do some more content that we're going to release out there. So, so that's the magician archetype. Pretty good overview of it. Kind of tells you what the archetype was, gives you some biblical and cultural examples of that. Dove into the shadow, talked about our own experiences. You got anything else you want to say before we sign off on this episode?
Not off the bat, no.
All right, guys. Hey, well, we hope that you've enjoyed this episode of The Sword and Staff. Let us know what you think about this episode. Drop your comments on Instagram, Facebook, wherever it is that you heard this. Give our podcast, if you would, an honest 5-star review. Whenever you do that, that helps us to be found. It helps us with search engine optimization. It helps people find us. It helps get the message out that we're putting out there. So if you could, and if you could leave us a 5-star, honest 5-star review, that would be a major help to us, and we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Also, if you're interested in more of the content that we're doing, head on over to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/swordandstafforder. You can get the Sword and Staff uncut for just $5 a month. And in those episodes, sometimes Richie and I have conversations that go on afterwards and uncut conversations. Sometimes we release Patreon exclusive things on there that we don't release anywhere else. We're going to release some Patreon exclusive stuff today because we've got a February Q&A that we need to back up and talk about. So we're going to be talking about all kinds of topics. But what we do with those is whenever you become a patron, we put polls out there every month and let you guys drop comments on there and tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about. We give you an opportunity to ask questions about whatever it is that you want us to talk about. And then we do Patreon-exclusive videos where we answer those questions. We're even talking about bringing patrons on to some of these videos to have live conversations. Also, we release episodes faster on Patreon, right? They drop there before they drop anywhere else so that patrons can listen to them first. Then we drop them everywhere else. We also have other tiers out there as well that come with swag, with all kinds of different stuff. So if you're interested in that, head on over to patreon.com/swordandstafforder. You can get more information there. So, Richie, before we sign off on this episode, do you got anything else you want to throw out there?
I'm good.
All right. Well, guys, hey, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Sword and Staff. We'll be back with some bonus content out there. We're going to get back into some paranormal topics. We've got a lot of odd things to talk about. And everybody's been telling us they've wanted us to get back into talking about the paranormal stuff. So we should have some of that coming out here just shortly. So we hope you guys are excited about that. And we'll see y'all next time.
See you then.
See ya.